Yeah, a lot of interesting topics. We're just talking to my friend Michael earlier today. He's an aficionado of comparative Buddhist Vajrayana teachings, and you'd think that being an aficionado of Vajrayana teachings that those would serve you somehow. But it turns out that they don't. And you're like, wow. Well, when you go in search of refinement as a destination or an experience, and especially refinements that have been espoused by illustrious masters, dead or alive, then you're just a dumb fuck poser in search of refinement. You know, it's like, no matter where you turn, no matter what metaphor has tickled your fancy, one is still of the nature of a durable power of attorney, right? In pursuit of, let's say, the most sublime or the highest Buddhist or Vajrayana refinement that has been elaborated upon in the literature. And it's like, oh well, you're going to be stuck in that for a while. Because there's this, we get so immediately invested in turning to the sublimity of Vajrayana or whatever teachings, hoping that they will provide a remedy for our discontent, or that we can compare our experience to what we imagine the experience of someone else has been, so that we can zero in on refinement, or zero in on the ultimate. But the damn reality is so clever that it has no ultimate. it has no destination. There is no perfect condition or perfect refinement that one attains to within the context of experiencing. So if you've read someone that claims to have spoken intelligently about the nature of refinement, then you're just a refinement junkie. And one will never be satisfied. Because no matter what subtlety you may stumble upon or cultivate through willful means, is going to be the end. Yes, I think that's quite so. I mean, if the pursuit and cultivation of refinements is, you know, where what floats your boat, right? Your karmic predilection. Then yes, you can riff. You can improvise with those refinements to your heart's content. But that has, you know, let's say, nothing to do with attaining to liberation. It's like nothing really has anything to do with anything, because there's no possible measure or baseline for comparison to say, oh, yeah, this is it. Oh, that's not it. Oh, this is it. Oh, that's not it. Oh, this is more refined than that. Oh, this is consciousness, you know, eating its own tail. Or this is consciousness without any remnant whatsoever of subjective nature. Or this is consciousness without any remaining spark of duality, right? You're like, duh, what? Who, why do you, what is the point? Right? Because as long as there's that kind of narcissistic burn to liberate from anything, you know, as a liberator, then you're kind of missing the point. It's like reality is going on its pleasant way right under your nose, and you're holding out for it to appear to you the best way possible. Yes, I think he appreciates having a conversation or a point of view which sheds a little light on the superstition of awakening or refinement being of a certain nature. It's like, hey, this shit suffers, okay? And there's no reason why you need to even recover from the suffering that it's doing, you know, to entertain you. Right? It's like, if we insist on being a survivor, a non-suffering survivor, then what we do is we simply continue to contribute and cultivate more suffering. Right? It's the classification of what's appearing as samsaric versus nirvanic that is really the dilemma. If there's no longer an attraction or a compulsion to classify, and then one no longer needs to bring the curious nature of experiencing along for the ride as the authority or the classifier. So, okay, experiencing is occurring. Okay, so what does that have to do with me? Okay, so there's suffering, or there's joy, or there's elation, or there's refinement, or there's jhanic bliss, or there's, you know, me being an idiot and ending up, you know, a recidivist. Okay, so what else you got? I mean, it seems like a very kind of chauvinistic or, you know, heroic masculine approach to the Dharma to think that this is set up for you to accomplish something. You know, that you sit on the highest throne, or you sit on the lowest throne, or that you've mastered the art of absolute equanimity. And you're like, yeah, so? You know, what, did that help Jesus live past 33 years old? You know? Did that keep Ramakrishna from dying from throat cancer, you know, at his early age? You know, Nirsagadatta literally smoked himself to death. Ramana Maharshi ended up with, you know, cancer and lost an arm. What? Was that the highest, or was that the lowest, or was that someplace in between? Does immaculate health till 227 years old, is that the winning ticket? You know, if we're not what would you say? Mortified. Mortified by our own clinging stupidity. then we remain in the right, the entrapment, the psychic entrapment of seeking for refined experience. And tell me, if you were the magician assigned to confuse humans, right? Let's say you were brought into God's chambers and God said, Suzanne, we've had our eye on you, and we think that you're quite capable of architecting a solution to our problem. And you say, well, wow, God, I mean, that's fantastic. I had no idea that I was, under review, but I sure am happy to be sitting here speaking with you. What can I do for you? And God says, well, I want you to convince human beings that they're not me. And you're like, whoa, how would I do that? All right, well, I would design a system that self-obscures to make it appear that in the midst of unmitigated, unadulterated, unqualified freedom from all things, including experiencing, that something's going on, that something's actually happening. And God says, wow, Suzanne, that's a real nice blueprint. Why don't you draw up a sketch, and we'll talk about it next week. And so you come back and you say, oh, look, it looks like this. Humans imagine that they're not you by virtue of being absolutely overwhelmed and flabbergasted by nonstop radiant proliferation. And God says, bingo, you nailed it. Put it in production. And you get a gold star, which means you can eat at the executive cafeteria. And the rest of us remain in abject confusion because of the mastery of your design. It's that simple. That's right. That's right. That's what we got here. It's so obvious that it's all there is. Yeah. That's right. And so, rather than elaborating upon enlightenment as an ultimatum, or a fetish, which is what all these religious systems do, right? All these religious systems confound us with a genesis, a hierarchy, a portal or a portage, right? Like the search for enlightenment is a portage. You get out of one river, you take your canoe and all of your belongings, across some gnarly rocks, and then you place your canoe in another river, and you think that, that was worthwhile. And this ongoing, unrelenting, radiant personification of nothing at all makes it appear as if we're something less than in search of something more than. And you've succeeded at your blueprint. You're hiding. God is hiding in full display. God is hiding in the place that no one would ever look. Where is that? Inside of you? God is hiding inside of you as you, but you never thought to look there. You're pretty funny. So, any idea that we have about anything, any idea that we have about anything, is a symptom of this miracle self-obscuring. Right? Any idea that you have about anything at all, including the most wondrous sublimity of your own first-hand experience, is a feature, a symptom, that this is self-obscuring. Yeah, it's pretty simple. You know, the whole the excavating journey starts by presuming this to be something about me, and something unsatisfactory, either about it or about me or about both. And so the radiant texture that being is presently baffling and self-exfoliating is obscured by its capacity to tell itself stories faster than it can actually listen to those stories. You're outgunned. And we don't know how to cope with the first-hand observation of being outgunned. So, this kind of maybe hides behind its own pistol and imagines itself to be of an individuated or disparate nature. Which is basically a way of saying, unconsciously you could say, it's a way of saying, hey, I'm totally outgunned, back off, and let me suffer. Because you could say the first-hand appreciation of being outgunned, not once, but always and forever. You're outgunned nonstop, which is a kind of a funny way of referring to free fall. You're always outgunned. This miracle is kicking your ass into oblivion. It's drop kicking your ass into oblivion nonstop. If that's seen or entertained, even with good humor and theatrical possibility, you can start to pick up the scent of it. But our typical strategy is obstinate denial. That's how and why they're suffering. It's the simple, obstinate denial, which is not voluntary, nor your fault, that we are so outgunned by the breadth and depth and fractal fullness of this radiant culture that rather than be completely drop-kicked into oblivion, we kind of dig in our heels and say, oh, no, 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 I exist, this is happening, it's about me, and therefore unsatisfactory. No, because all the fine tuning does is adorn the obstinate denial of what this already is. And through that adornment, we think that we can outwit or outgun this, but we can't. And that's, you could say that's the blessing. The liberation is the, in a manner of speaking, I wouldn't even call it surrender because that's there's too much baggage there. The liberation is simply the recognition that you are always and forever outgunned. And then you rest, right? You don't put up a fight. In other words, you liberate in the revelation of being outgunned. And the habit of obstinate denial simply evaporates. Yeah, you know, were there a flow? I mean, even the apparitional appearance of experiencing and all that it entails within human culture, insect culture, mineral culture, cosmic culture, Higgs bosonic culture, and no matter where you look, no matter how many eyes you've got, what composites you've got on your head, let's say you've got an insect eyes and you can see 100, you know, TV screens at the same time, right? Even if you've got a multi-composite eye, or you can smell as skillfully as a dog, or change color as skillfully as a chameleon, or withstand incredible pressures underwater and eat plankton at, you know, 30 leagues under the sea, you're still outgunned. There's nowhere that you can turn where this miracle is not drop-kicking you into oblivion. At a minimum. Yeah. Because the infinity of this, meaning non-finite, right, is not a question of numerous beyond the capacity to count, although infinity can refer to that. It also refers to the revelation that you are drop-kicked into oblivion from moment to moment, outsmarted, outgunned, outmaneuvered, and there is no way for you to put the brakes on this through representation, through meaning, through parsing, through identification. And so the myth of identification, which is the obstinate denial of what this is, persists. And the myth of identification is what is so alienating to us. But we're so proud of it. We claim that, oh, I'm tired of suffering and I would like to practice this thing and that thing so that freedom can one day be won by me. Which is a lie. Because while we're claiming spiritual authorship or spiritual commitment or spiritual cultivation or a genuine and sincere urgency to no longer be pushed around by samsara, we're still obstinately denying that we're being drop-kicked into oblivion. So it's not, you know, I mean, go with the flow is a nice kind of phrase, and we've heard it before, and we can appreciate what it refers to. But this is so bizarre, you know, from moment to moment, so multifaceted. I mean, truly beyond any capacity to measure it. You know, it's like going with the flow or not going with the flow is almost... too simple a view, right? Yeah. Yeah, who cares? Really, who cares? See, but once we start caring about what we imagine our present condition to be, and the only way that we can imagine what our present condition is through obstinate denial. Otherwise, you cannot imagine what your present condition is. So once you've imagined what your present condition is, and then chosen, that it's insufficient. Yes, that's right. Yes, that's what it constantly does. It can't, you know, I mean, this can't do anything but one thing. And the only thing it can do is blow smoke up its own ass, which means that you or I become, let's just say, unwitting expositions of obstinate denial. That's all it can do. And you could say the revelation of that, the appreciation of that, you could possibly release one from any association with this at all. It's like you kick back and you live the life that appears to be the sweater that Brahman put on that looks like you. You see with a certain kind of humor or wry appreciation that you're being drop-kicked into oblivion and that there's nothing you really need do about this ever again. And that doesn't have to mitigate the imagination or the presence of suffering. It might, but it doesn't have to. But if we're holding out for the mitigation of suffering, of the lame way in which we experience this beatitude, then that's obstinate denial. You want this to appear in a way that's pleasing to the likes of you. But the likes of you is just a heretical maniac running up and down the street yelling, "I exist," when indeed you don't. Now, it doesn't erase anything, because whatever this is or isn't hasn't gone anywhere. It's still capable of experiencing itself in all the ways that you and I have experienced it. But something, you could say, something funny, something strange, might, let's say, enter a transit. Yeah. No story told. It's like, hey, I'm being drop-kicked into oblivion from moment to moment to moment. There is no way that I can get a leg up on this shit. This shit has me beat. And so maybe one kicks back and goes, wow. Oh, my God. Wow, look at all this sensation. Look at all this experiencing. Look at all these textures. Look at all these feeling tones. Look at all these, you know, miraculous, subtle, apparitional appearances wafting in and out in what I call my consciousness. Look at the aspiration and inspiration of being a person. Hi. It's that Steve Jobs guy. Ah, I see you connected now with your microphone turned off, and I'll switch it on. I mean, I turned off your telephone. Yeah. Me neither. No, yeah. You should give up. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, pretty much, right. That's right. We become self hysterical. Yeah, this must be the laughing yoga thing. People threaten to join this call all the time. They never do. What can I say? You know, it's if you don't write a book or commit yourself to some kind of celebrity, then you're useless. Just chop liver. It's probably better. It's probably even more than probably. It's totally better that way. You know, because otherwise, once you're I mean, once you're on the radar, right, of seeker fuckers, then, you know, like any drowning victim, they will take you down. Because that's what seeker fuckers do. They take you down because you can see the inertia, right, the power, the potency of the myth of suffering is so fantastic and fantastical that, you know, the seeker fucker is not actually looking for release from individuation. The seeker fucker is looking for a guaranteed amelioration. Because they're not quite ready for, call it total disturbance, right? They're still trying to flail about within the field of remedial possibility as a persona, as a person, as an experiencer. They want orderliness where there is disorderliness, which is just again the continuity of obstinate denial. Yeah, and that's what you hear when people get up to the microphone to talk to Adyashanti, or when they, you know, bask in the glow of Bentinho Massaro, or when they share their lamentations with Pamela Wilson. You know, that's just the seeker fucker making sure that they stand on your shoulders while you take on water. But it's always right. It's always been like that. Why are the monasteries, you know, full? Why does anyone listen to Thich Nhat Hanh? You know, what was so mesmerizing about his books and slow chewing and childish singing and vile sale of mindfulness, as if mindfulness is going to be a meaningful remedy for anger, for narcissistic self-absorption. It's not. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. The whole of Thich Nhat Hanh's enterprise, global enterprise, doesn't work. But it does entrap countless, you know, millions in the game of imaginary amelioration of imaginary identity through the cultivation of mindfulness and seeking attention from others by virtue of being an ideal practitioner. It's just a parasitic sham. It's a giant parasitic sham. But so is the church. So is the mosque. So is the temple. So is neo-Advaita and non-duality. It can't be anything other than a parasitic sham. Because being drop-kicked into oblivion always sets you free from any condition. The only way you could be of the nature of a condition is to put on the brakes, obstinately deny the fact of oblivion, and place yourself, in a position, right? In an experiential position. That's how you suffer. You have to first place yourself in an experiential position, and then you can whine, you know, all the way to the, if you don't mind my saying so, the therapist's office. But like I was saying to my my dear friend Michael, who was talking about this, you know, if your belly hurts, and that's that metaphor is meant to say, if there is discontent, right, in the solar plexus, right, whether through fear or self-loathing or afflictive thinking, shame, right, blame, self-directed misanthropy. That's all suffering in the belly, right? And that's we get that. I mean, you know, life on Earth, were there life on Earth, lived by the average primate, whether in Western or Eastern or Asian or Northern or Southern or exotic cultures all over the globe, everyone suffers from identity distress. And so if one suffers from identity distress, PTSD or otherwise, then there's nothing wrong with, what would you say, pursuing remedial activity, remedial philosophy, remedial yogas, remedial drugs or therapies to quiet the discomfort in the belly, right? But that's all belly work. Nothing wrong with it. Nothing right with it. Nothing gained by it, nothing lost by it. It's just, it's what it is. It's belly work. And all of that belly work occurs because of what? Well, I would say, and I'm no authority, thank goodness, but I would say all of that belly work occurs because of the misappropriation of identification in the first place. Otherwise, where would be all of this, you know, all of this? Yeah, where would all this strain be coming from if not from the miraculous capacity of this radiant expressive proliferation to self-obscure? It's a misappropriation of consciousness. Yeah, that's right. It's a misappropriation of consciousness, which is very, 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 very good at suggesting that there is someone there. That you are there. Okay, nice. That's the insurance code for the misappropriation of consciousness is 29632. I like it. Yeah, that's great. This client is suffering from a clear 29632. A misappropriation of consciousness, and so we have a therapeutic, plan and profile all worked out. Which will include, copious whitefish and bagel chips. And only the finest of hand-blended soft drinks. I mean, you know, when we have shame, right, that shame can occur by things that have occurred to us, right, have been meted upon us, right? Whether, any number of violations, psychological violations, emotional violations, physical violations, sexual violations, right? Violations of dignity, violations of autonomy, right? And guess what? Once you're born here, you know, you're a sitting duck for violation. No, there's just no escaping it. I mean, you know, I wish everyone wishes, I don't know if anybody cares, that, the way this complex bioluminous behavioral matrix behaves happens to be violating education, orientation, avocation, right? Vocation, avocation, the whole of it, right? Getting food, getting money. Yeah. Right. The violation of race, the violation of gender, the violation of culture, the violation of socioeconomic class, the violation of political assignments, the violation of mindfulness, the violation of Robert, what's his name? Zin Kin. Kin fucker. From the University of Massachusetts. John Kabat-Zinn. What, he's some guy in a white horse? No, he's just another violator. He's just another parasitic asshole that is trying to sell mindfulness, because if you practice mindfulness, your heart rate will go down, your stress levels will go down, your cortisol whatevers will go down, you'll breathe more deeply, you'll digest better, you'll be capable of better relationships, maybe you'll earn more money, you know, you'll climb the ladder more efficiently, right? So it's all that stuff. And again, that's all belly work, right? So a Jon Kabat-Zinn comes along and it's like rah rah sis boom ba, or Deepak Chopra comes along, rah rah sis boom ba, or Carolyn Meese, or, you know, all the celebrities, including all of the celebrities in the theatrical world. It's just a giant drug. No question. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, right. And there's no, you know, besides making fun of it, including oneself, there's no reason to do or not do anything. Do it all. Take ayahuasca. You know, I mean, recently we went on a tear about, you know, take ayahuasca and go to the roller rink and go and do this and do that and then go to a retreat and then go to Hawaii and then bury yourself in a hole and then go smoke some, you know, something with the huicholes, right? And then he's like, yes, so. In other words, pack your life with every curious remediation that you possibly can. Let's presume you had unlimited time and unlimited resources so that you could indulge yourself, pamper yourself in New Age and other kinds of remedial activities. And guess what? That wouldn't work. It wouldn't work. Yeah. Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes you can find a very convincing, cathartic personality that emerges from, you know, a total burn down. Yeah, yeah. You get a phoenix from ashes, right? Phoenix don't blossom any place else but a pile of ashes. And those you know, personalities or revelations that emerge from absolute ruination can sometimes be genuine, compelling, right, enviable. Maybe they're enlightened even, who knows. You know, when a bug crawled across Byron Katie's hip and, you know, she had the catharsis of a lifetime, now she's on the top of her game. Hey, that great, fantastic. Jet. It's kind of like what draws you, right? Not putting you or me on the spot, but really it's like what draws you right now, right? What's the next thing to do, or what's the next thing not to do? What's the next thing to think? What's the next thing to feel? Where's the interest and urgency for the next notch in your spiritual gun belt? Right? Am I going to become a the work facilitator, or a purveyor of the yoga of radiant presence? It could be, you know. Yeah, I mean, you can, if you don't become one, at least you can go on YouTube and watch really cool videos of you know, Shaolin monks that dedicate countless days and hours to the most arcane, you know, martial art feats of magic. You're like, so some guy can actually handle his entire body weight on an index finger with his feet leaning up against the wall, right? And you're like, hey, that's real nice. That's fantastic. Would you like your corned beef with or without sauerkraut? I, I mean, it is a wonderful thing. I mean, it's a miraculous feat of human call it the capability, to stretch your legs wide apart and, I don't know, levitate or swallow a sword or kill 30 people with a pencil. That's what I want to do. I want to be able to kill 30 people with a pencil. Not that I actually want to kill them, but I just want them to know that I can. So that they'll, Yes, that's right. Taking one, taking two, taking three. Right. Hey, that guy can kill anybody with a pencil. All right, let's make a movie about it. Super. Yeah, really. No problem. Yeah, that's no problem as far as I'm concerned. I got a pencil. I'm gonna get those bastards. it's a violent and violating species gone mad. And that's cool. Girls gone wild. Girls gone wild, humans gone mad. Yes, indeed.
Thank you.
Well, yeah, there's no way to objectify or subjectify that you are kicked into oblivion from moment to moment, drop kicked. Yes, that's right. I mean, we think we can measure it, right, in terms of who's, like those people at Insight Meditation Society, shit like that, when they want to justify the culture of, lengthy vipassana, right? So the way to justify the culture of lengthy vipassana practice is... enlightenment is an accident, and meditation makes you more prone. Yeah, more prone to accident. So you're like, oh, okay, so then enlightenment is an accident, and so we'll spend as much time as we can on the cushion, and we'll practice various kinds of, Asian sense deprivation, right? And we're in hoping that... through this committed cultivation of mindfulness and vipassana practice, that we'll make ourselves more prone to liberation, and bada bing, bada boom. And so that becomes a culture, right? A culture of explanation or justification, a culture of thinking what this is or what it isn't, and hoping that that the miracle of liberation, which I imagine I am in hot pursuit of or craving, will occur to me through the sacrifices I make or the number of hours I put in. And you're like, that's cool, but it's more belly work, right? Yeah. Because the only portal to awake is this one. That's always and forever the case. The only portal there is to reality happens to be this very moment, right? And so trying to cultivate an artificial form of behavior or mentation is kind of silly. I mean, it's silly. Now, it doesn't mean it may not appear organically in your, let's say, custom adventure. Yeah, sitting around quietly is an organic response to the subtle hint that you are being drop kicked into oblivion, and so you're interested in learning more about it. And the revelation of that, whatever that suggests, is always, it's me, it's now, it's me, it's all there is, it's this, it's me, it's this, it's all there is. Here it is. As we speak, this unspeakableness is drop-kicking us into oblivion. We're melting and disappearing from moment to moment. And all of this miraculous capacity for association and language and storytelling and memory and humor or lack of humor is, at our fingertips. It's all on tap. But see, you can see, right? You can feel what happens to you when you're just, you become disinterested in becoming. when you're no longer duped by, let's say, your own proclivity or predilection for becoming. It's like, are you okay? Are you okay? Like, right now? This? Is this okay? Does it have to be what? Something? Do you have to add to it? Right? Does it have to feel a certain way for you to say, aha, 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 I'm almost there, or aha, aha. I mean, there's nothing. There's nothing here. There's absolutely nothing here, but everything is here. But nothing is here, but everything is here. But wait, there's nothing here, but yeah, but everything is here. But no, but there's nothing here. And this is nonstop. So the association of being someone in a time, in a place, in a zone, in a gender, in a body, in a belief system, as the consequence of anything, that hallucination is not going to leave you alone. But it doesn't mean it has it in for you. It's just part of the fractal crystalline nature of profuse association, profuse proliferation. You're like, okay, all right, so this fucker can outdream me and will make it appear as if I am something right now, that I've been something before right now, or that I can actually occupy an ideal subtle condition referred to by some as, enlightenment. You're like, no, I don't think so. I don't think so, no. No, that's not what this is doing. No, drop it, not happening. But as we become, curiously relaxed with oblivion as the, oh my goodness, right, the nonstop deliverable, then something might begin to shift in the psyche so that the urgency of identification relaxes. The myopic urgency or pressure of identification can completely, absolutely completely relax. And you are, guess what? You are yourself. I'm not saying I know what that is. Thank goodness. But you are yourself. And you're not bound by ideas. You're not bound by time-space. You're not bound by birth. You're not bound by things that may have occurred to you in the past or your miraculous capacity for ideation, right? Mm-hmm. And that's this, that's you. You are unbound. You are Brahman below no other. just like this, with absolutely no effort, with no crown, with no accomplishment. Tag, you're it. Now go play in the street. It's so strange that this just as it is, without airs, without accomplishment, without having to prove anything to anybody, you know, without having to behave in an idealized, enlightened, or compassionate manner, is you, is yourself. This is yourself. And it is as free from all affliction and all qualification, you could say, to the same degree, or let's say arguably to a greater degree, than it can also be afflicted by association and meaning-making. Samsara and nirvana, you could say, operate hand in hand, not as enemies, but hand in hand, inexorably, with the same profuse power. Nirvana is not better than samsara. Nirvana is not waiting in the wings for samsara to cease. This is this. It is nirvanic and it is samsaric as a simultaneity, as an inexorable radiant proliferation. And that identification, or the myth of identification, can occur and apparently appears to occur from moment to moment. But zero identification is also just as prescient, just as present. And the discovery is now, not, you know, when I get home from my mindfulness retreat or after my next ayahuasca adventure. The discovery of the magnanimity, the unadulterated magnanimity of radiant being, is here. Curiously here. And here again. Yeah, so, you know, that's why I think the best advice for really a seeker fucker like ourselves is, hey, fuck you. There's no point in getting, like, you know, any more special about it. It's like, hey, fuck you. You're you. Super. Cool. You see, the moment that we're embroiled in trying to convince ourselves of a thing, or remedy a thing, or be better than a thing, we're just, you know, living in the profuseness of paucity, and the radiant profuseness of paucity. Which is, oh, this is a thing, and I'm it. No, that's not the case. So you wonder, you know, where the Buddhists or whomever it is get off, you know, writing about the refinement of states. What are they trying to say exactly? It's like, duh. Oh, you mean this can fool itself? Yeah, we know that. This can fool itself. To what degree can it fool itself? Hey, how about endless? This can fool itself endlessly to the nth degree. And it's like, oh, wow. Wow. it's like you used to think, maybe I can outwit this. And so it would be wise for me to go in search of enlightenment. But once you see, no, I can't outwit it. Then you relax, right? You just relax. You're like, dude, this is unoutwittable. So you relax. you don't go creating or assigning thingness to no thingness and then try to remedy it through the heresy of enlightenment. All you can do is scream as you go flying, hopefully, between the goalposts. Every gesture, every tickle, every sensation, every activity is a universe of bizarre bliss. Catch a few minutes of it here or a few seconds of it there. It sneaks up on you once in a while. And you begin to notice it. You begin to notice your own, let's say, unearned capacity for residing or presiding as no thing. It comes, it goes, it's loud, it's soft. But once it's made its presence known to you, right? Once you have made your own presence known to you, it's coming for you. It's going to take you down. No question. Yeah, and good for you. Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, each of us are, you know, as good as the Terminator. Right? Consciousness tries to take you down, and, you know, you chew through your own chains, and you come out fighting again. That's cool. Yeah, that's right. That's right. And the stress of it, the regret, you know, the affection, the baroque nature of behavior, the frustration, the impatience, the gratitude, the disgust. You're like, what else you got? You know? Fill my begging bowl, please. Yeah, and okay. I mean, me, my crappy family, my crappy memories, everyone's disgusting, lamentable, regrettable behavior, the way that I feel about it all. It's like, yeah, fill my begging bowl. That's great. I mean, you know, what do we expect from a pile of dumb fuck bacteria? What? You know, enduring affection? Compassion? equanimity, relaxation, intelligence, creativity, sustaining use of natural resources. Everyone should become a vegan. Right? What do we want from this? What do we want from ourselves, or our family, or our partner, or our deceased ancestors? What? There's no reason, no real good reason to have the slightest interest in this being other than it is. To try to idealize the textures of the human experience. Right? A lot of our sorrow, a lot of our grief, disappointment in ourselves, disappointment in others, the wounding, right? The grief, the associations. They're all about, you could say, the naive but good-intended expectation that human experience could and should be different, better, somehow accountable. And it turns out to be, you know, curiously, perhaps maddeningly disappointing everywhere we turn. It's really okay that humans suck. And, you know, that humans, whether we are capable of behaving well or not, have a sensitivity. You know, the miracle of a certain sensitivity, call it moral or supramoral, that humans suck. We're, whatever we are or aren't, are capable of a miraculous palette of sensation and sentiment. Cool. Lions eat their young. Eagles have intercourse in free fall. Try it sometime. I mean, all of our sorrow and all of our grief, all of our disappointment in ourselves and other people and institutions. It's fantastic. It's like a fine cognac. It's like a glass of Louis XIII at $189 for a shot, or Louis XVI, whatever the hell it is. You know, 200-year-old cognac. That goes from barrel to barrel to barrel until it becomes worth $180 a shot glass. That's what this is. It's the finest. The finest of spirits. I'm sorry, did I answer your question? I don't have any idea. we're just strolling through Central Park in a horse-drawn carriage. Enjoying the lights and the sound of the wheels and the hooves on the cobblestone.